Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the North Coast. Welcome to the Community Center of the Elk River Rancheria. And we're very grateful to the Sovereign Nation for giving us access to this building. It's really quite magnificent in many ways. But particularly the elk who guards us all this morning. It is Thursday, the 19th of February. It is just past 9 a.m. And I would like to acknowledge that yesterday we had an election of officers, and Alex Hart, who is online virtually from Siskiyou County, would normally have been chairing this meeting, but there she is remotely with, probably looks like Mount Shasta hanging over her shoulder there. So anyway, Madam Chair, welcome again. And as your Vice Chair, I have the, you normally say honor and privilege, but I really like chairing meetings, so I'm a happy guy chairing this meeting, but I am looking forward to Chair Hart assuming her normal duties at our next meeting, and trust that the weather will be more clement in April anyway. So with that said, this meeting is being webcasted and recorded, so all participants please speak clearly. Members of the public who wish to observe or to address the board may join the meeting at the noticed physical location where we are, or may use the Zoom application to address the board from a remote location. For people who only want to listen or watch the meeting, the board's customary webcast is available at www.cal-span.org. In addition, we are receiving presentations and public comments through a Zoom meeting platform. If you intend to present or comment or think you might be interested in commenting, you should already be in the Zoom meeting room using the meeting ID and the password you received from the clerk. If you've not already received the meeting ID and the password, you can go to our website at www.waterboards.ca.gov /North Coast. Click on the February 18th, 19th board meeting button and follow the instructions to complete a virtual speaker card. You will then receive an email from the clerk with the Zoom login information. For anyone here in the meeting room that wishes to address the board, please complete a speaker card available on the tables at the entrance to our meeting room and give it to the clerk. For those in the Zoom meeting, your camera will be turned off and you will be on mute until it is your turn to speak. The clerk will unmute you when it is your turn to address the board. We will call each commenter by name and then unmute each commenter. I would also like to ask those who have provided a contact name to please state your name for the record before you speak. There is the normal 5-minute time limit for each commenter. During public testimony, you will see a timer on the screen. For those calling in by phone, we will run the timer and let you know when your time is up. And as your chair, I will also be reminding you that your time is up, so be prepared. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you're called upon during public comment. When you're done speaking and the board members have completed asking questions, you will be placed on mute. You can remain in the Zoom meeting until the completion of your item, and then may choose to exit the meeting or continue. Now, we don't have this on the written schedule, but I believe that the vice chair of the state board is going to be joining us. Is that correct? Do we have Vice Chair DeMott? Well, there you are. Good morning
yes,
to you.
Good morning, Board Member Vice Chair McKenzie and board members. I appreciate your indulgence with my schedule. We had a board meeting yesterday, so I wasn't able to appear during the regularly scheduled agenda item. So I will start off with an update on the water quality certification program update for the Potter Valley project. On December 22nd, our board issued a public notice for the comment period on the draft water quality certification for the amendment to that project. And public comment has closed. It closed on the 16th of January. Moving on to update on the Sacramento San Joaquin Bay Delta, the update to the Bay Delta plan. On December 12th, our staff released a revised of the updates to the Bay Delta plan. And that release included a limited recirculation of a new chapter, Chapter 13, for public review and comment of the draft staff report and substitute environmental document in support of the updates, including an updated project description that includes the Healthy Rivers and Landscape program with supporting environmental and economic analyses. We did hold a three-day hearing, public hearing, at the end of January. And we received a lot of comment. Written comments were due on February 2nd, but we had strong participation at that three-day hearing. We received over 300 public comments. Staff is currently working on the response to comments, so stay tuned on further updates for that. Shifting gears here to water recycling, on January 21st, we approved emergency regulations to administer newly appropriated funds for the water recycling funding program. And these are funds that we received, appropriated by the legislature as part of the 2025 Budget Act, provided for in Prop 4, the climate bond approved by the voters in November of 2024. That bond authorizes approximately $386 million for water reuse and water recycling projects. And in the legislation that appropriated a portion of that, we received $150 million under the Budget Act of 2025. So we need to move quickly and as a result, adopted emergency regs to administer this new program. At our February 3rd board meeting, we approved two water rights orders that include case-by-case exemptions pursuant to our policy for maintaining in-stream flows in Northern California coastal streams. These were multi-year projects that our staff worked on, and I'll just go over some brief details. The first application involves an existing on-stream storage reservoir and diversions from Yellow Jacket Creek, a tributary to the Russian River located in Sonoma County. The application extends the season of diversion in order to implement commitments of a safe harbor agreement. And that safe harbor agreement reduces diversions on the Yellow Jacket Creek in summer and fall, provides for fish passage improvements, provides for riparian habitat restoration, and includes criteria that the Department of Fish and Wildlife determined to be protective of anadromous fish. And then the second application, also in Sonoma County, allows for diversions to an existing reservoir located on an unnamed ditch to an unnamed creek, a tributary to the Petaluma River, and that reservoir is located approximately 1 mile above the limit of anadromy. Conditions of approval include in-stream flows with regionally protective standards during the protective season of December 15th to March 31st, including a minimum bypass flow requirement. includes the application approval in the order also includes gravel and wood augmentation, riparian habitat replacement, and non-native species eradication. So I thought you all would be interested in a little more detail on those two very important orders that we issued. All right, moving on to the Irrigated Lands Program and the Agricultural Expert Panel. This is the second expert panel that our board has convened, this one to provide an updated review of the various irrigated lands programs that the nine regional boards implement, along with guidance from presidential orders issued by our board. There have been a number of, I counted them, but I didn't include this in my notes. I've sat through many of these expert panel public comment periods and also through their deliberations. I believe there's been at least 9 or 10 meetings. The sessions currently are focused on their panels, deliberations on issues relevant to the charge questions that we provided them. So if this is something that any of you are interested in following, there's a lot of recorded meetings that are available online through the YouTube, but see the program page for how to access that, and also stay tuned for next steps, including possibly additional sessions that they might be scheduling for their deliberations. All right, switching over to the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. On December 2nd, our board approved a resolution to return one of the sub-basins in the San Joaquin Valley, the Cahuilla Groundwater Basin, back to the Department of Water Resources. And then we also did something similar with the Kern County sub-basin on December 8th. So I'm just really pleased. I know our entire board is working closely with those sub-basins and reading through the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. It's very clear that the preference is local management of groundwater basins. And so we have a limited backstop role, but we have the very clear authority to step in, place basins on probation, and develop an interim plan if needed. And in these two basins, they did take that time after we issued a determination of probation. They rolled up their sleeves, got to work, and submitted plans that satisfy our board and also, we feel, the requirements under the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. And so once returned, the GSAs will continue managing groundwater in the sub-basin under the Department of Water Resources jurisdiction. And we do have another upcoming determination to make on the west side, Delta Mendota Basin. That appears to be somewhat in line with a similar outcome. And then we'll be turning to the two remaining basins that have been placed on probation and possible work on interim plans, the Tulare Lake and Tule Basins, where many challenges remain in those basins. All right, reporting on the groundwater ambient monitoring and assessment program update. Our program staff, in order to satisfy requirements of SB 200, the aquifer risk map has been rolled out, and it's intended to prioritize areas where domestic wells and state small water systems may be accessing groundwater that does not meet safe drinking water standards. So recall, SB 200 is the safer program that we administer for improvements to drinking water conditions throughout California. The assessment is not intended to represent groundwater quality conditions at any domestic supply well, any specific well, or state small water system location. But the map is the first of three risk indicators, water quality, socioeconomic, and water shortage, that's published in the Combined Risk Dashboard for Domestic and State Small Water Systems, which is typically published in the second quarter of each year. And is part of the safe and affordable funding for equity and resilience our annual needs assessment report. So important information to feed into that report. Update on Delta conveyance. On December 4th, our administrative hearings office released an amended hearing notice for the Delta conveyance project hearings. The petitioner's rebuttal portion of the public hearing will begin on February 20th and then continue in February and into March. More information can be found on the program webpage. And then lastly, an update on Scott and Shasta Rivers and the extension of the emergency regulations to protect native fish in those watersheds. On September 26th, the legislature approved Assembly Bill 263 that extends by statute our board's previously adopted Scott River and Shasta River emergency regs. And those regulations will remain in effect until 2031 or until permanent rules have been established and implementation of long-term in-stream flow requirements are adopted for these watersheds, whichever occurs first. I know this is something that your board and as staff is very much engaged in and following closely. And I'll just say that we will have annual updates, and there will be opportunities for public comment and review of, I think the first step really is going to be focusing on improved models and information that can help inform the decisions going forward. And then in the meantime, as we continue implementation of the existing regulation, just know that we continue to provide for, and so does the statute, the opportunity for local cooperative solutions to provide water right holders with an opportunity to propose alternatives to curtailments under our regulations. Our staff did just update the program page listing approved local cooperative solutions and describing different types that are available and providing useful guidance. I believe the application period, applications for this year are due April 15th. So I would encourage anyone that's interested to go to the program webpage. And I know that's a lot, but so thank you for your patience and the opportunity to present this information to you. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Well, thank you very much for being with us this morning. I suspect on your last topic that that Chair Hart will be particularly interested in activities involving the Shasta and Scott River. Chair Hart, do you have any questions for the Vice Chair of the State Board?
Well, since I'm getting to actually be on a computer during the meeting, I was in the process of looking up the webpage, Dee Dee. So if I have any questions, I'm certain I'll follow up with you via email.
Great. Thank you. And thank you for your engagement in this issue.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'd also like to introduce you to the newest member of our board who's sitting in my far left. Dale, could you introduce yourself to the State Board Vice Chair?
Hi there, Dale Romani from McKinleyville, Humboldt County.
Anyway, we're very
nice
pleased.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Sorry, we're very pleased that we now have five members off our board, so we're a wee bit protected now from what happened to us in December when we didn't have a quorum. So that's a good thing. And we're also encouraging other people to apply into the infamous black box of the governor's appointment secretariat. Two other things. You mentioned Yellow Jacket Creek, and yesterday our staff member Jake Shannon gave us a full presentation on restoration programs here in Region 1. And we're the very proud leaders in restoration activities throughout the nine regions. And thank you very much for your action on that. And one last thing. In the audience is Charles Reed. This is Charles Reed's last board meeting as a staff member. And we'd just like to let you know that we're acknowledging his service And he's sitting here very patiently, and he won't ever have to attend another board meeting again unless he wants to. So that's my little oration from the chair. And we, as always, thank you for taking the time to.
Mr. Chair, I have a comment for you.
Yes, I'm not forgetting you, Greg. Anyway, we have a comment from our board member, Gusti.
Thank you, sir. Good morning, Dee Dee. Happy New Year. You started off your presentation talking about the Potter Valley project and the water cert that your board is undertaking. Just, and I'm not sure you might even have an answer for my questions, but recently the federal administration inserted or tried to insert its authority into the FERC process related to the Potter Valley project. My questions are, given some political activities going on in Washington, is your board still moving forward under the assumption that PG&E will surrender their permit? And then is the JPA still functioning with your board in anticipation of the retirement of the PG&E permit and that this project is moving forward? Or is there a bump in the road and everybody's taking a wait-and-see attitude given the federal administration's recent action?
You know, that's a good question. And I actually, in preparation of today, looked into that myself. As far as I know, we're still moving forward. We've got the comments that, you know, just came in January 16th. And so staff is busy working on that. As far as the announcement from the USDA secretary, I'm not aware of any change in course that's resulted in. We're aware of the announcement, but at this point, it would be in FERC's hands whether or not there is a change in course or some type of response. But I am not aware of any, and I checked into it, you know, before coming here, and our staff is not aware either. So I don't have anything to add to that. Maybe we'll know more, you know, the next time I appear before you.
Well, I've always appreciated you keeping this board informed with what's going on. And I know you'll continue to do that. So thank you for your attention to this matter. It's going to affect a lot of people in Mendocino and Sonoma County, whatever happens. And it's a big deal up here. So and thank you again for always bringing it to our attention and sharing your board's involvement. I very much appreciate that, Dee Dee.
Thank you. Thank you for your question.
We'll look forward, by the way, to seeing you up in Sacramento when we all the regions get together. I believe it's in the merry month of May. So I'm hoping to attend, and I don't know what Chair Hart's schedule is, but in any event, I enjoyed being there last year, and I plan to be there this year and meet face-to-face. And thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you. I look forward to seeing you in May as well, and I'm looking at my calendar, and the date's not popping up, but I believe you're correct. It's in May. Look forward to that. Thank you. Good to see you all.
Thank you very much. Have a grand day.
You too.
Okay, we now move on to our agenda, and we have an action item. Action item number 9 was scratched, but action item number 10 is now up. This is the time and the place for a hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider adoption of resolution number R1 2026-0005 for project criteria for an exception to the enclosed bays and estuaries policy prohibiting waste discharges to the Humboldt Bay for the City of Eureka. This item has been properly noticed. Will all those who expect to give testimony in this matter please stand? Raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that you will tell the truth in this matter? Okay, you're all sworn in. Jolly good. We do have rough timelines here for staff for 20 minutes, permittee for 20 minutes, interested public 5 minutes each, board questions 15 minutes. I don't know how we'll do with that. I mean, I won't be holding you exactly to your 20 minutes, but that's the rough outline that I've been given. And at this time, we will start with a staff presentation, if you would.
Good morning, Vice Chair McKenzie and Chair Hart. Congratulations on your elections yesterday. Look forward to working with you guys. My name is Justin McSmith, and I'm an engineer in your NPDS unit and current caseworker for the City of Eureka. I'm here to discuss the proposed resolution R1-2026-0005. The proposed resolution in front of you today provides the City of Eureka specific criteria for potential projects that may lead to an exception to the enclosed bays and estuaries policy discharge prohibition. This presentation will provide a description of the facility and its location, some background on the history of the regulatory environment leading up to today's discussion, discuss any public comments received, identify any changes made to the resolution in response to those public comments, and provide staff's recommendation to the board. The Elk River Wastewater Treatment Plant was designed and constructed in the early 1980s. You can see an image here of the wastewater treatment plant's physical footprint, along with additional marshes surrounding just to the south of the facility. It is located on the east side of Humboldt Bay near the mouth of the Elk River. In addition to the area encompassing the process structures and equipment, the plant maintains 139 acres of dedicated wildlife wetlands. The wetlands are comprised of freshwater and tidal marshes, ponds, and riparian habitat. The wastewater collection, treatment, and disposal facility serves a population of approximately 45,000 from the City of Eureka and unincorporated areas within the Humboldt Community Services District through an extensive sanitary sewer system consisting of 125 miles of sewer mains. The overall system collects and conveys over 1.5 billion gallons of wastewater per year. Give a background on the enclosed bays and estuaries policy. The policy was originally adopted by the State Board in May 16, 1974, and amended on November 16, 1995. The purpose of the policy is to provide water quality principles and guidelines to prevent water quality degradation and to protect beneficial uses of waters of the enclosed bays and estuaries. The policy prohibits most municipal and industrial discharges to bays and estuaries. Specifically, the policy states, it is the policy of the State Board that the discharge of municipal wastewaters and industrial process waters to enclosed bays and estuaries, other than the San Francisco Bay Delta system, shall be phased out at the earliest practicable event or date. Exceptions to this provision may be granted by a regional board only when the regional board finds that the wastewater in question would consistently be treated and discharged in such a manner that would enhance the quality of the receiving waters above that which would occur in the absence of the discharge. Further, State Board Order 7920 provided guidance on how to evaluate whether an exception to the enclosed bays and estuaries policy for Humboldt Bay specifically is warranted. Order 7920 stated that a discharge not only provide full protection of beneficial uses which the receiving water body is capable of supporting, but also yield a positive water quality benefit. As specifically applied to Humboldt Bay, the State Board interpreted the enhancement provision of the bays and estuaries policy to require full secondary treatment with disinfection and dechlorination of sewage discharges, compliance with any additional NPDES permit requirements issued by the Regional Board to protect beneficial uses, and the further realization of existing beneficial uses or the creation of new beneficial uses, either by or in conjunction with the wastewater treatment project. The latter requirement could conceivably be met by the creation of additional marshlands or wetlands. Discharge at this outfall location has been permitted since 1981 with the stipulation that effluent be discharged only during the outgoing tide to ensure conveyance to the Pacific Ocean. The decision to discharge treated effluent at this location in Humboldt Bay was based upon mathematical modeling, tidal monitoring, and a dye study completed in 1979, which indicated that the discharging at ebb tide was expected to convey all effluent to the Pacific Ocean. You can see the discharge point in the bay in the picture to the right. The best science of the time indicated that the ebb tide currents in Humboldt Bay were sufficient in strength to carry the effluent out of Humboldt Bay and to the Pacific Ocean. And as a result, discharge to this location was thought to be a viable alternative to an ocean outfall as a means of implementing the statewide enclosed bays and estuaries policy. The city's discharge point includes a diffuser that allows the effluent to mix rapidly with the Humboldt Bay during ebb tides and conveys effluents towards the mouth of the bay, which is just south of where the discharge point is. The 2009 NPDES permit required an effluent discharge study to document the ebb tide discharge from the Eureka Wastewater Treatment Plant and that it does not adversely impact the beneficial uses in Humboldt Bay. The study was submitted on January 7, 2014, and demonstrated that not all the effluent was conveyed to the Pacific Ocean upon discharge, as previously concluded in the original 1979 study. Since it was determined that 90% of the effluent remained in Humboldt Bay, the discharge of effluent from the facility was required to be regulated under the Inland Surface Waters and Enclosed Bays and Estuaries Plan, as opposed to the Ocean Plan. The 2016 NPDES permit regulated the discharge as a discharge to enclosed bays and estuaries, and a cease and desist order was adopted alongside the 2016 NPDES permit. The 2016 cease and desist order required the city of Eureka to eliminate the discharge of untreated and partially treated waste due to sanitary sewer overflows and bypass events and comply with the enclosed bays and estuaries policy. So with that, all that, that's why we're here in front of you for the proposed resolution. State Board Order 7920 did not restrict exceptions to the enclosed bays and estuaries policy to marsh and wetland creation projects. The proposed resolution provides clarity on the scope of acceptable projects and identifies additional types of potential projects that may qualify for exceptions, expanding beyond traditional marsh and wetland creation to include infrastructure resilience, drainage and waterway improvements, pollutant removal, community protection, and sewer expansion efforts. Potential projects may include relocation of or protection of vulnerable infrastructure, including wastewater infrastructure, or projects that promote resilience to the impacts of storm surge, coastal flooding, and sea level rise, and thereby allow the fuller realization of beneficial uses in Humboldt Bay. Projects may also include reengineering of drainage or stormwater conveyance infrastructure or restoration of streams and other waterways draining to the bay. Projects that create and restore wetlands to improve Humboldt Bay water quality, increase resilience, and support estuarine and aquatic habitats. Where feasible, projects that restore natural hydrologic features such as stream corridors, groundwater recharge areas, floodplains, and wetlands. Projects that reestablish historic salt marsh areas or create a new salt marsh areas would allow for the further realization of beneficial uses. Projects that remove legacy pollutants outside of the responsibility of the city of Eureka impacting the bay, would allow for the fuller realization of beneficial uses. Examples of legacy pollutants to be removed or remediated may include dioxin toxic equivalents, polychlorinated biphenol, petroleum hydrocarbons, volatile organic compounds, pentachlorophenol, other semi-volatile organic compounds, furans, and metals such as arsenic, cadmium, lead, vanadium, and zinc. The shoreline area of Humboldt Bay includes many disadvantaged communities whose access to clean water, public services, and general health, safety, and welfare are threatened by sea level rise and climate change. Projects that help to mitigate risks to these communities would assist in maintaining and providing these communities with continued access to clean water and public services. Projects that sewer unsewered areas around Humboldt Bay will need to demonstrate effectiveness of pollutant removal that would otherwise be discharged without expanding sewer services to unsewered areas. Any proposed project will be submitted to the North Coast Water Board staff for initial review and ensure that it meets the criteria listed in the resolution. If staff determines that a project meets the criteria for an exception to the policy, the project will be included in a future NPDES permit renewal process. The project will be subject to the public comment period to allow public stakeholders the opportunity to bring any concerns to the board's attention. The board will also make the final decision on any proposed project. Today, the board is not taking any action by voting on the resolution. The board is clarifying its interpretation of the criteria and the types of projects that may be considered eligible for an exception to the enclosed basin and estuaries policy. The 2023 NPDES permit includes a compliance schedule that requires the city to submit a feasibility study that analyzes alternatives to bring the city into compliance with the enclosed basin and estuaries policy. The compliance schedule does not name the alternatives that will be analyzed, but the city will be looking at a potential ocean outfalls, groundwater injection, and projects that meet the criteria listed in the resolution. The feasibility study will include funding sources and the preferred alternative and is due October 1st, 2026. The resolution was noticed for a 30-day public comment period. The City of Eureka requested that the resolution be updated to include conclusions from the 2021 ammonia modeling study and a request for mixing zone dilution credit. Staff made those revisions to show that less than 0.2% of ammonia concentrations discharged remained in the bay when the effluent was discharged on outgoing tides. The city also indicated that the 2026 feasibility study will evaluate an ocean outfall as an alternative with up-to-date cost estimates. The city further requested that the resolution be amended to change the phrase "the protection and further realization" to "protection or further realization of beneficial use." It is staff's interpretation of Order 7920 that any exception project include both the protection and further realization of beneficial uses. Further comments received were from Humboldt Community Services District. They are responsible for a collection system of unincorporated areas around the City of Eureka and discharge of the City of Eureka Wastewater Treatment Plant. The CSD submitted a letter of support for the resolution. Of particular interest to the district is the criteria regarding projects that sewer unsewered areas around Humboldt Bay. The district serves approximately 8,000 water connections and 6,500 sewer connections. This criterion allows the district to collaborate on enclosed bays and estuaries policy exception for the Elk River Wastewater Treatment Plant discharge while promoting sustainable solutions toward the long-term goal of serving all district residents. Additional comments were received by Humboldt Bay Waterkeeper, and they expressed concern regarding the impacts of an exception project on the designated beneficial uses in Humboldt Bay. Projects following the criteria are not likely to meet the standard as adopted by the policy, and they would like to see an ocean discharge further evaluated as a feasible alternative to the current discharge to Humboldt Bay, and also reconsider the project criteria in the resolution and instead make every effort to bring the Elk River Wastewater Treatment Facility into compliance by improving the quality of the effluent discharge. I do want to note that Humboldt Waterkeeper submitted a document showing that Nordic Aqua Farms LLC has been disbanded, and so there is capacity at the ocean outfall that the Humboldt Bay Harbor District owns, and that will be part of the feasibility analysis that the city will be performing, looking into possible ocean discharges.
Justin, have you verified that the hatchery is not going forward?
I have not. So I have reached out to both my Nordic contacts, and their emails are no longer working. And I have not fully confirmed that they are not pursuing the facility still. That, I'm in the process of doing that. I've contacted the Harbor District regarding that. But I would say at this point, it's up in the air. And so as far as alternatives go, we have more doors opening and other ways to investigate what we can do. But I will continue looking into that to verify. They could be just trying to find more funding. I'm not sure at this point, but I'll continue looking into that. North Coast Water Board staff acknowledge the need to protect all beneficial uses in Humboldt Bay. The resolution as proposed does not authorize exceptions to the policy that do not enhance the quality of the water in Humboldt Bay. As part of the feasibility study due in October 2026, the City of Eureka is required to investigate all possibilities for a new discharge location, which includes an ocean discharge. North Coast Water Board staff are confident that a project or projects developed using the criteria from the draft resolution can improve water quality throughout Humboldt Bay. For example, removal of creosote-soaked piles would improve water quality by removing legacy pollutants that continue to impact Humboldt Bay. Salt marsh restoration will allow habitat for beneficial uses to be increased while also providing flood mitigation and nutrient removal.
I just want to tell you you're off by a slide.
Oh, see, thanks. Quick read. and the final comment letter received was from the Ecological Rights Foundation. And they have concerns surrounding the shellfish industries, commercial aquaculture, and wild shellfish harvesting that directly sustain local livelihoods, food systems, and cultural practices. They state that any policy that increases the likelihood of waste discharges into Humboldt Bay increases the risk of harm to the community members who recreate in Humboldt Bay. They believe the resolution would facilitate exceptions allowing waste discharges into Humboldt Bay, including discharges that may consist of partially treated sewage or wastewater. As a response, the city has previously submitted a biological survey that was completed in 2019 and compared marine microalgae and invertebrate species in the immediate vicinity of the city's outfall with marine microalgae and invertebrate species in a control site. The study found no evidence that suggested degradation of biota in the receiving waters from the city's effluent discharge. The resolution does not increase the likelihood of waste discharges to the bay. The City of Eureka may only receive an exception to the policy in a future permitting action if the wastewater treatment plan and its discharge to the bay is found to both protect and enhance beneficial uses in the bay. The criteria included in the draft resolution apply specifically to the City of Eureka. North Coast Water Board staff do not intend the criteria in the draft resolution to apply to other regulated entities. The resolution does not authorize additional or expanded discharges. The resolution does not alter the City of Eureka's operation of its wastewater treatment plant. Effluent continues to be treated to levels that are protective of beneficial uses and discharged on the outgoing tide in intermittent releases to minimize the amount of effluent that stays in Humboldt Bay and cumulative impacts to beneficial uses. So the board decision today is to address regulatory status of the City of Eureka's wastewater discharge to Humboldt Bay and recommends criteria for potential future compliance with the enclosed bays and estuaries policy. The board is not approving a specific project and does not grant an exception to the policy's prohibition. The criteria is established specifically for the City of Eureka and is not intended to be used by other dischargers in Humboldt Bay. With that, staff recommend that the board approve resolution R1-2026-0005 for project criteria for an exception to the enclosed bays and estuaries policy prohibiting waste discharges to Humboldt Bay.
Well, thank you very much for your presentation. I will ask the board if they have any questions of staff at this time. Greg?
Thank you. Thank you. Justin, as always, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Spot on. Explain to me how you resolve the contradiction between the 2014 and the 2021 outflow report.
So one key component of the difference between the 2021 study was it was focused on ammonia concentration specifically in and around the discharge, and not it wasn't focused specifically on how much of all particles of wastewater remain in the bay. It was more speaking to how much of the concentration of ammonia in the effluent discharge stays in the Humboldt Bay. It was mainly done for mixing zone study and dilution criteria versus the 2014 study that was looking into how much of the actual effluent stayed in the bay. Staff is working with other internal staff to analyze, further analyze the modeling that was performed on both studies and to...
Our staff or Humboldt?
Our staff.
Okay.
Yes, your staff. Myself and I'm working with Dr. Lance Lay to further analyze to see if we can determine why each study is showing such differences.
And this is more of an academic question, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but we all know, you know, that there are four tide cycles in a day, too high, too low. There's
yes,
a low tide, and then there's a low, low tide.
Yes, sir.
Right? So today the high is, both high tides are at 6.8 feet today. The low tide is at 1.6 feet, but the low, low tide is at 0.3 feet. So there's quite a shift in how much water is coming in and out of that bay.
Agreed.
I know that the discharges occur on the outgoing tide. Does the permit stipulate do it on the low tide or the low, low tide, or it's the discretion of the operators?
It's the discretion of the operator. That is something that we could look into at another NPDES permit renewal. But I have faith in the city's operators and the cooperation that we've had over the years. They know the bay specifically. They know their plant specifically. And it's in their best interest to have enough volume in the bay while also having outgoing tide to be able to carry that effluent throughout.
I would trust their working too. I'm sure they're intricately knowledgeable of all this. One last academic question. Do you know if and how oyster sampling is done to ensure human health criteria?
Yes, CDPH is in charge of oyster. California Department of Public Health.
Okay.
They provide an annual survey of Humboldt Bay every year to us and our executive officer, and they include discharges from Arcata and the city of Eureka in those reports. If there are any sanitary sewer overflows or large runoff from stormwater events, the California Department of Public Health has the ability to shut down those growing areas until they determine that water quality is being increased to an acceptable level to continue farming. There are also requirements for the city of Arcata and the city of Eureka to be able to notify CDPH and local oyster growers in the event of any of a sanitary sewer overflow to be able to protect shellfish harvesting during those times.
And Justin, I always appreciate asking you a question because I know I'm going to get a well-articulated and well-informed answer. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you, Greg.
No more questions, sir.
Thanks. And I can just briefly add that regarding California Department of Public Health's efforts with the Humboldt Bay Shellfishing Management Plan, Charles has been working for a while coordinating with CDPH for a potential information item before this board to so CDPH can present on those efforts. And so I believe Kelsey Cody will be taking over that mantle upon Charles's retirement, and we hope to provide that information item in May when we're in Eureka.
Any other questions from the board? Agner.
Yeah, just looking out there a few years, when considering upgrades, construction upgrades for facilities, are plans being incorporated to take into account the potential of sea level rise and how it affects your infrastructure?
Yes. So in 2020, the city submitted a climate change adaptation resilience plan and inventoried the threat of sea level rise to their infrastructure. And I like to view it as a living document, since science and data changes. Humboldt Bay does very good work looking into sea level rise because of the threat to their communities around there. And the city is well aware of the location of the infrastructure projects, and they do have a plan moving forward. As always, they work with us to try and find the best path forward for protecting their facility and their infrastructure.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Any other questions from the board? I don't have any questions myself, so I'd just like to thank you for a very complete staff report and all the work that you've done. So,
thank you, Chairman Kinsey.
That would mean that the permittees now would approach us and give us your presentation from the city of Eureka. And if you could introduce yourself and then proceed with the presentation.
Of course. Good morning. My name is Kelly Allen. I am the Public Works Director for the City of Eureka.
Good morning. Jesse Willer. I'm the City Engineer for the City of Eureka.
Hello. Katie Marcelon, Project Manager, City of Eureka.
Thank you. All right. I'm going to start. Maybe. Red button. No, it's not changing. Okay. This is
it. Yeah, it should be this way.
Magic trick.
See, it worked for me.
I know.
I don't know why it didn't for you.
Oh. Oh.
There we go.
Okay.
Just a little delay.
Okay. Sorry. Okay. There we go. All right. We just wanted to start out first by recognizing that we appreciate the North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board's continual coordination. We'd like to acknowledge the long-term commitment that's required to navigate these complex regulatory and environmental and financial challenges. This resolution reflects years of diligent work, analysts, and collaboration. So with that, our presentation is going to cover the health of Humboldt Bay, some background, the purpose, and the framework, and some outcome of this resolution.
Part of our information sharing today is also to help ground us in the context of some of these components of the resolution, and we wanted to cover the features of Humboldt Bay. Can you click for me? We know that Humboldt Bay is this really dynamic setting that includes fishing, boating, marine cargo. We're part of the Pacific Coast Flyway, so the migratory bird highway, salmonid, so we're home to special status species, also abundant recreation opportunities, and then a variety of habitat types: mudflats, eelgrass meadows, salt marsh, brackish marsh, wetlands, and coastal dunes.
Okay. City staff lives and works and recreates in Humboldt Bay's region. Its health directly affects our community, families, and livelihood. Protecting Humboldt Bay is not just a regulatory obligation, it is a shared responsibility and core value for city staff. Staff are committed to safeguarding water quality and beneficial use, using the best available science and data to guide these decisions, and pursuing solutions that provide lasting environmental, public health, and community benefits. Every study and analysis and recommendation is a long-term goal for resilient, healthy Humboldt Bay for current and future generations.
So So I'll talk a little bit about our treatment plan and the policy governing that discharge. The Elk River Wastewater Treatment Plant is a trickling filter-based plant. We're very common type of plant that you see throughout the California and the United States. We have a headworks, primary clarifiers, trickling filters, secondary clarifiers, and disinfection. Our sludge is handled through anaerobic digestion, which helps us power the facility through a cogeneration engine. And then we also have facultated sludge lagoons to help manage that sludge. Our setting is adjacent, as Justin described in detail. We're next to the bay. We're next to Elk River. You'll see here in this slide from a different perspective, looking out over the bay and Elk River, that we are very near to the bay. What's difficult to tell is the elevation change from down there at sea level up to where the plant is. The plant was planned to and constructed at about 21 feet elevation. So we have a great deal of elevation above where our king tides are reaching at this point, which are somewhere around 10 feet in the Humboldt Bay area. The current policy for the Elk River Wastewater Treatment Plant, as we've discussed a bit already today, we're governed by the Enclosed Bays and Estuaries Policy. Originally, the plant was permitted as an ocean discharge, as we discussed, and stayed that way until 2016. And affected with that cease and desist order in 2016, we were determined to be a bay discharge, and hence under the Enclosed Bays and Estuaries Policy. In that water quality order 7920 that was mentioned by Justin in his presentation, that kind of guides how criteria are determined for Humboldt Bay currently, and hence while we're here today to discuss those criteria. Our current permit requires us to do a feasibility study to evaluate alternatives, and one of those alternatives is an potential enhancement projects to Humboldt Bay. So that work is underway and has been underway for some time now. That overarching study includes a number of studies, including an OSHA and outfall alternative analysis. It includes modeling of ocean currents and how that outfall would interact in the environment off the Humboldt Bay area. We also are looking into deep well injection as an option, new relocation and a new wastewater treatment plant. And then also, again, as we are here today to discuss an enhancement project for an exception to the Enclosed Bays and Estuaries Policy. A little update on the work that's going on currently. The City of Eureka is currently has a project in construction where we are looking at eliminating, bypassing secondary treatment. That project is 1 year into construction and has one more year of a construction schedule. This is a significant project and the biggest project at the Elk River Wastewater Treatment Plant, and it's a very significant project for the City of Eureka. That project includes not only enhancing or increasing the secondary treatment capabilities of the trickling filters and the secondary clarifiers to take all flows that would come through the wastewater treatment plant. We also have a 8 million gallon equalization basin that will be repurposed, where you see in the bottom of this photo are two facultated sludge lagoons, that southern lagoon. That one was being currently converted into a 8 million gallon equalization basin to help store excess flows so that they can be recirculated back through the treatment plant to get that full treatment that they need.
Okay, so part of what we wanted to share again is just that a visual connection to our site. And the image on the right is a navigation detail, and it talks about the depth of the navigation channels in Humboldt Bay. Generally, the North Humboldt Bay section is more shallow. The navigation channels in the central bay or are at a depth of 38 feet, and then we have our South Bay area, which again, there's a turning point for different marine and shipping uses. The image on the left really just shows that aerial overview, kind of North Bay, Central Bay. And I'm going to share some information about the historic setting that, again, some images to help understand. In this photo, you can see the smokestacks. So this was during a time of lumber use and logging sites, pulp mill uses. We don't see those active smokestacks currently around Humboldt Bay. And then a perception here of the mouth of Humboldt Bay and the shoreline of Eureka we'll talk about a little bit more. But just in terms of the historic background, we know that there was a big period in Northern California and uses on Humboldt Bay for the lumber industry and fisheries industry. This had dramatic impacts to water quality that at that time also wastewater collections and treatment systems were limited. And the resulting, you know, work that came from that was really highlighted in 7920, where there was a mandate to combine collection systems and treatment systems, move from primary treatment to secondary treatment, and for those who were going to discharge, that they would provide enhancement to the receiving waters above that which would occur in the absence of the discharge. Moving, you know, through the decades and seeing the outcomes from that resolution and those observed impacts, this is an aerial image again, just kind of focusing on North Bay is somewhat more shallow. The section around the Eureka shoreline has that deeper channel, and then South Bay. And so we saw another period of time where we broadly throughout California, there was increased environmental regulation, and there was this understanding that these natural resource-based industries had some damaging impacts, this more broad-based awareness that there were historic uses that had caused environmental impacts, and then a shifting of regulatory policy related to that and in hopes to improve water quality. Again, restoration became a big trend or part of our culture that we see around Humboldt Bay, that not just along our shoreline areas, but also in our watershed, especially Elk River, that had a lot of impacts related to logging uses and lumber uses. And then we saw on the wastewater side, the collections and treatment systems almost universally shifted to secondary treatment. And then even after that, really focusing on the reduction of INI. And as we mentioned earlier, now the wet weather bypass flows that were acceptable during a period of time are no longer going to be part. They're going to be moved into our treatment train or into our treatment path. And where does that leave us now? So over the last two decades or so, we've been looking at climate change. We've been looking at sea level rise planning. So the image on your right really shows a 7-segment breakdown of how we're doing shoreline planning around the city of Eureka. And then the photo is an image of storm damage from the New Year's 2006 storms. So here we are now trying to look ahead, reflecting back on what has happened around Humboldt Bay. And the studies and data that we have now with our sea level rise planning, we know that Humboldt Bay and the Eureka shoreline is increasingly exposed to sea level rise. We also know that our area has some geologic unique circumstances with tectonic activity. In some locations, studies are showing tectonic subsidence with increased sea level rise, with higher rates of sea level rise projected. We know that in our area, we have over 40 inches of rainfall annually, and that the intensity and duration of storm events is larger. We have these atmospheric river events with multiple days of high flows. So the combined effects of tidal flooding with our fluvial flooding during our winter storm periods is something we're planning for and managing. Additionally, the proximity of Eureka to the mouth of Humboldt Bay means we do have that deeper water, a higher velocity of tidal exchange, a higher amount of wave activity and wind wave activity that leads to erosion and our need for planning. So again, just a reference to this image. This image also has some labels on it, which identifies the Eureka Slough, which is to the north of Eureka, and the Elk River Slough, which is to the south of Eureka. And those two watersheds really hug our Eureka shoreline, and we wanted to bring you in a little bit closer and describe what's happening on our shoreline. So this is, a bit of a zoom in, and Eureka really sits up on a coastal terrace. We do have a watershed boundary, and we have three tributaries that drain down into the Eureka Slough. And then on the south side of Eureka, we have our other kind of smaller tributaries and watersheds that connect into Martin Slough and the Elk River Slough. So that means in a big storm event, these areas are being, you know, supercharged with our rainfall. And then we're also seeing these same low-lying watersheds seeing that tidal flooding and fluvial flooding where they interact. This is a historic 1870s map of Eureka. And again, portions of that early development really sat up high on that coastal terrace area. But those areas that you see in gray, that would be bayward, were all salt marsh historically. And those locations that are more bayward of Broadway or Highway 101 were filled. A lot of salt marsh was filled so that the industries could get access out into the shipping channels. And then on the north side of Eureka, Myrtle Avenue, a lot of the area that was north of that was also filled. So again, you're seeing those three channels draining down into the Eureka Slough. And for us currently, this is Eureka built out. Those same areas where fill was placed and development was placed are the most likely inundation areas and the most likely locations for us, you know, the vulnerability. And so we can joke and say Mother Nature, she's going to take it back, right, where we filled. Additionally, because of the way Eureka was developed and the uses along our shoreline, that's where the predominant location for industrial and commercial uses. So tidewaters touch upon the shore of Eureka where those historic legacy uses included heavy industrial and commercial. We also co-located a lot of our infrastructure to have access into those areas. So now that infrastructure is threatened. Our roads and trails, our power, gas and electric connections, our communications, phone, fiber, and data, our water distribution and storm drain systems, and our sewer collections and sewer pump stations. So the whole effort here for us as staff is to help remind you that we are part of this bay. We have an investment here, and we are doing an extensive amount of study in terms of what Eureka is being challenged with related to sea level rise and climate change, and also that our treatment plant is a big part of our work, and how do we navigate these next few steps through the feasibility study. The existing policy under enclosed bays and estuaries and under 7920 does not really acknowledge the current conditions for Humboldt Bay and California. It doesn't record any of the climate change threats and sea level rise threats. And that's why we're so appreciative for the work between us and your staff to bring forward this resolution, that the proposed resolution really highlights the importance to dovetail the feasibility study and the alternatives analysis with sea level rise planning and shoreline planning to provide some project alternatives that will create lasting benefits.
Like Katie said, this resolution is going to provide regulatory clarity for compliance with the closed basin estuary. It's consistent with the water quality 7920 while establishing current conditions and factors that are affecting the water quality in Humboldt Bay, and it allows for consideration of projects that provide multiple community benefits. The State Water Board has acknowledged the unique conditions in the Humboldt Bay, and the potential for projects must enhance the beneficial uses. This resolution provides criteria for evaluating those potential projects that are addressed. Fuller realization of beneficial uses, climate adaptation and resiliency, habitat restoration and creation, removal of legacy pollutants, and disadvantaged communities and public health. This resolution will confirm that projects enhancing beneficial use may qualify. It will provide a clear framework for future projects evaluations. It will allow city to provide alternatives that reflect current science and conditions, are environmentally responsible, improve water quality in Humboldt Bay, and a resilient, and I think that part should have been left off. And that's it. That's all we have. Do you guys have any questions?
Hector?
Thank you very much for all the details in answering the question I had, just concerned about the future and that you prepare for it. I think all coastal communities have this challenge to adapt to a changing environment and changing weather patterns, and I commend you for that.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you, sir. First of all, thank you for coming and sharing a really good presentation. Many years ago, as an undergraduate, I did a work study, two semesters in a sewage treatment plant in San Francisco Bay. So, and I had a family member that worked at that same plant for over 20 years. So I've watched the ins and outs of wastewater facilities and appreciate the engineering marvel that they are, and that stuff wears out and stuff breaks and stuff happens. So I also appreciate that there's no finish line to this kind of work, that you're always looking ahead. And I really resounded very loudly with me, that you're looking ahead, trying to stay ahead of the curve, which we all know you have to do. I appreciate very much your efforts working with our staff and to make sure that your life is made easy and it protects the water quality for the people of Humboldt Bay. So thank you very much, and I really look forward to seeing where you go in the future.
Chair Hart, you have your hand raised up there.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for your presentation. My time on this board, I've learned a lot about the watershed up there in the Bay, and I enjoy learning about it. It's just such a fascinating geological area, and I'm glad that we have great peers, very obvious, great working relationship with our staff, and I agree with what Greg just said. I look forward to see where this goes in the future. So thank you.
I just wonder, is there any current connection with EPA Region 9, the Clean Water Act? I'm assuming that back in the day that EPA's construction grant program was part of the funding source that enabled the construction of your wastewater treatment plant, but I'm still not quite clear in our current era whether Region 9 EPA Water Division pays any attention to the Humboldt Bay or not. Do they? Do you see anybody from Region 9?
Thank you, Jake. We do work with EPA representative from Region 9 and pass NPDES permits through for review, things like that. We have a little bit of discussion for funding, but that's primarily done through the state board. And one unfortunate thing for the city is that they are considered a large disadvantaged community and are not eligible for grant funding. So they have a harder time trying to find money for projects like this.
And we've heard about this inability to qualify under disadvantaged communities. And I'll just say it out loud. Has there been contact with state legislators who represent this area in terms of a possible waiver or some legislative fix to your particular problem?
Yeah, we've reached out to our representatives with this issue, and there's been discussions. I think we're not alone in this, being a severely disadvantaged community, but also being over that threshold as far as being small and disadvantaged. We have no resolution going forward. There seems to be some discussion, but not a lot of movement on the matter as far as, you know, our situation being kind of in that larger category and then being disadvantaged as well.
Thank you for these answers. Any other questions, statements from board members? Dale?
Yeah, you mentioned your feasibility study is in process. Do you guys have a pathway that you are preferring or that's come to light that's more feasible, or I guess in that term?
Yeah, we're still in the evaluation process. This process we're going through now will help clarify one part of that feasibility study, but we do not have a preferred alternative identified at this time.
Thank you.
I believe that's the questions from the board, so we'd like to thank you for coming up here and for testifying in front of us, and appreciate that, and also have a much better understanding of the difficulties that you face in this extremely complex ecosystem that you've laid out in front of us. I spent part of my earlier political life working with US EPA. Well, that's now the political part, but then I did work in the city of Roanoke Park with the city of Santa Rosa and dealing with their sub-regional wastewater treatment plant. So I'm familiar with some of the complexities of wastewater treatment management and disposal of the effluent. So thank you all again for being here. Now, this would be public comment time, I believe. So do we have anybody in the room? I don't believe so. Do we have anybody on Zoom?
Yes, we have a few folks on Zoom who would like to comment.
Oh, okay, then the five-minute interval for each presenter, and please go ahead and introduce each of them. Thank you very much.
Okay, up first is Sylvia Van Royen. After Sylvia, we'll have Rachel Hernandez. Sylvia, you should be able to unmute now if you could state your name and make sure we can hear you.
Yes, hi, my name is Sylvia Van Royen. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Good morning, board. My name is Sylvia Van Royen. I work for Humboldt Waterkeeper as a GIS and policy analyst. Humboldt Waterkeeper was formerly Humboldt Baykeeper, but we are now Humboldt Waterkeeper. To protect Humboldt Bay's beneficial uses, we strongly oppose the proposed exceptions to the enclosed bays and estuaries policy, which states that exceptions may be granted only when the regional board finds that the wastewater in question would consistently be treated and discharged in such a manner that it would enhance the quality of the receiving waters above that which would occur in the absence of a discharge. The city of Eureka should focus first on improving the treatment capacity and effluent quality of the wastewater treatment facility to protect Humboldt Bay's beneficial uses, particularly water contact recreation and shellfish harvesting. While the proposed projects of piling removal and salt marsh restoration are certainly worthwhile, tying these projects to the wastewater treatment facility is a questionable use of ratepayer funds. So we urge the regional board to deny resolution number R1-2026-0005 and instead evaluate feasible alternatives to discharging into Humboldt Bay for this facility. The city of Arcata is currently exploring ocean discharge for their treated effluent in their feasibility study for sea level rise adaptations. Eureka should prioritize the same alternative in their upcoming feasibility study. With Nordic Aquafarms having dissolved their California LLC in January, 10 million gallons a day of discharge capacity in the Harbor District's ocean outfall have now been freed up. So the Elk River Wastewater Treatment Facility has been long overdue for better solutions. We should not continue discharging wastewater into an enclosed estuary that supports recreational and commercial shellfish harvesting, protected aquatic species and recreation, along with other beneficial uses that rely on clean water. Thank you for this opportunity to comment.
Okay, Rachel Hernandez. You could please unmute and state your name to make sure we can hear you. After Rachel, we have Terrence Williams.
Hello, good morning. My name is Rachel Hernandez. I serve as the Wastewater Operations and Compliance Manager for the Arcata Wastewater Treatment Facility. I'm providing these comments on behalf of the City of Arcata. I want to thank you for your opportunity to comment and for your consideration of the project criteria for an exception to the enclosed bays and estuaries policy prohibiting waste discharges to Humboldt Bay. The City of Arcata is uniquely positioned to support this resolution as a discharger operating under an existing exception to the enclosed bays and estuaries policy. The Arcata Wastewater Treatment Facility has demonstrated decades of successful, sustainable wastewater treatment and water quality enhancement through the use of constructed enhancement marshes. The Arcata Marsh and Wildlife Sanctuary stands as a strong example of the positive benefits such enhancement projects can provide to the community, local wildlife, and the broader environment. We would also like to thank North Coast Water Board staff for their continued collaboration with municipalities and long-range planning efforts related to sea level rise, sanitary infrastructure, and coastal planning. This partnership is critical to ensuring resilient and environmentally responsible wastewater management solutions for our coastal communities. The City of Arcata appreciates that Water Board staff developed the proposed criteria using sound science gathered since the inception of the enclosed bays and estuaries policy, and that these proposed criteria reflect a deeper understanding of the needs around Humble Bay in informing potential qualifying projects. The project criteria developed for City of Eureka's Elk River Wastewater Treatment Plant provide a strong framework for future projects in Humboldt Bay, as they incorporate a comprehensive understanding of restoration opportunities, sanitation needs, and the protection and enhancement of beneficial uses in and around the bay. The City of Arcata supports the North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board in adopting this resolution, as it provides a clearer and more consistent path for planning projects that may qualify as enhancement projects under the enclosed bays and estuaries policy. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you.
Okay, and the last commenter we have is Terrence Williams. Terrence, you could please unmute and state your name to make sure we can hear you.
Ms. Terrence Williams. I'm the general manager for the Humboldt Community Services District, HCSD. Good morning, Vice Chairperson McKenzie and members of the North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board. Thank you for hearing my comments today. I appreciate the opportunity to speak. HCSD is an independent special district that provides water and sewer services to a population of about 20,000 people living within a 15 square mile area in the unincorporated communities outside of the Eureka city limit. The HCSD sewer collection system is connected to the City of Eureka's collection system at many different locations, and the district's wastewater ultimately flows to the Elk River Wastewater Treatment Facility for treatment and discharge. Through contracts, HCSD is responsible for 32.1% of the cost of capital projects that involve shared elements of the city's collection systems, as well as capital improvements to the city's wastewater treatment facility. The district's ratepayers live in the rural unincorporated areas of the greater Eureka area, which is host to a diverse population and consists of mostly residential connections, but also includes some businesses, commercial and agricultural uses. As a special district providing local public service, we also live and work in the community. The district staff are part of the Humboldt Bay community and enjoy recreation as well as the quality of life afforded by the beautiful place we live. With significant shoreline and sewer service to low-lying areas adjacent to Humboldt Bay, HCSD has similar capital needs to the City of Eureka related to infrastructure that will be impacted by climate change and sea level rise. For example, HCSD has been planning upgrades for collections infrastructure that is in the coastal zone and along the shoreline areas, and this requires navigating the complex issues for long-term infrastructure improvements in light of sea level rise. HCSD sees the proposed resolution as a tool to recognize the importance of capital project planning that may also support climate adaptation. Additionally, we believe that projects that create new wetland habitat may improve water quality in Humboldt Bay. The district is especially appreciative that the resolution addresses public health and the need to plan for unsewered areas by expanding collection systems where feasible. HCSD understands that this resolution is not approving a specific project, but instead provides clarity to the City of Eureka should they choose to propose potential enhancement projects at a future date. HCSD fully supports the resolution and encourages adoption. Again, thank you.
Thank you. I believe that concludes public comment on the item in front of the board. This was a public hearing for resolution R12026005 for project criteria for an exception to the enclosed bays and estuaries policy prohibiting waste discharges to the Humboldt Bay. And we have heard staff presentations. We have heard presentations from the City of Eureka. We have heard public comment. It is an action item, so I would entertain a motion from the board.
I would like to move that we adopt resolution number R1-2026-0005.
Do I have a second?
Second.
We have a second. Do we have further discussion from the board? Greg.
Thank you. Just a point I'd like to make. We've heard a couple of comments and the possibility, and along the lines of the possibility of the Nordic aquaculture facility going away and opening up pipe room, if you will. You know, it's one thing. It seems to me, it's my opinion, that most, if not all, wastewater treatment challenges can be fixed with money. Right? And so getting the money to fix stuff takes time, if you can get it. The environmental process takes time, if you can get the permits. So these are all great ideas, and I hope that the city will explore all great ideas. But I don't see how not adopting this resolution expedites the need for money and time. So I think we're all on the same track here. I think staff is working with the city. I've heard, you know, positive reception on the part of city representatives. So again, it's the old adage, time and money is what's going to fix this, and it does take time, and we have to be patient and continue to move forward to resolve these challenges. With that, I'm done, sir.
Any further comments from the board? Chair Hart, any comment? Do not see your hand raised.
None at this time.
Hello?
None at this time. Go ahead.
Alex is talking to you.
Oh, sorry. I wasn't hearing you properly.
She said no comments at this time.
No comments at this time. Okay, I'll call the question and ask for a roll call vote on the item that's on the floor.
Board Member Bedoya?
Aye.
Board Member Giusti?
Aye.
Board Member Romanini?
Aye.
Vice Chair McKenzie?
Aye.
Chair Hart?
Aye.
That successfully concludes item number 10. So that moves us forward to information items. We have two information items. Number 11 is the executive officer's report. Executive officer, do you have a report?
I'll just draw attention to the written report that was part of the board packet, and in particular note that it includes a couple of articles that are topics that have been of great interest to board members, including our annual report on freshwater harmful algal blooms in the region, and then also an update on our Native American culture beneficial uses project. And so just wanted to draw attention of board members and public to those written updates. Thank you.
Any questions of our executive officer at this time? Hector?
Yes, would it be appropriate for you to give us an update on Lake Pillsbury's work with NOAA, our staff's work with NOAA, and related to the releases of very silty water into the Russian River?
I think you're referring to Lake Mendocino and Coyote Valley Dam.
Yes.
I don't have any update at this point to share with board members and the public, but hope to have an update soon on the regional board's next steps with that.
Thank you. And the other was, I think we talked about it briefly, an update on the hatchery permit.
Yes, thank you for checking on that. I have just recently been in touch with staff regarding that. The plan for updating that permit, all of our permits of that nature, NPDES permits, have been delayed because of recent court decisions. And so that program has quite a bit of a backlog now, and actually staff will be giving a presentation to the board on that, I believe, in May, either April or May. We'll have an informational presentation to provide the board more information about those delays to NPDES permit reissuance. But at this point, we are, our staff's intention, I believe, is to renew the hatchery permit, not in this fiscal year, I think in the next fiscal year. But not renewing the permit doesn't mean that we're not in touch with the hatcheries. I understand that our staff have been in touch with the hatchery coordinator about any concerns they have about our permit, and have been talking through that. So, Board Member Bedoya, I know that you had a conversation with hatchery staff at CDFW, and I'm planning to follow up with you to just kind of square up what our staff are hearing from them versus what you heard from them and make sure everyone's on the same page. And then the final thing about hatcheries is that even though the permit renewal is delayed, we're looking at the possibility of providing a tour of a hatchery as part of a board meeting during this calendar year. And so our staff are reaching out to CDFW to check whether they are willing to host such a tour at one of their hatcheries. So we'll hope to get that on the books this year if CDFW is amenable to opening up one of their hatcheries to us.
Warm Springs Dam is the closest one that I'm aware of.
Yes, we've gone through from our perspective kind of which hatcheries might be the most interesting to visit, and we thought actually about one that's along the way to Wairika, and so we thought we may tack that on. If we're doing a meeting up in Wairika, we could tack on a field trip before or after to a hatchery.
That's perfect.
So that's
Thank
a possibility,
you.
But you're right. If we're trying to do it locally, Warm Springs would be great to visit too, and they have a really wonderful conservation hatchery program there.
Thank you.
Field trip, yay. let's see, where are we now? Number 12. Board member requests for future agenda items and other items of interest. I have a specific request for an informational item. I've mentioned it earlier in this meeting, and that it has to do with the PFAS and action that's taking place in this region. And I, as I said, I got a very full report from the executive officer that our staff had put together, and I would like to have that as a formal informational item on our next board meeting.
I hope that it'll be okay with you for me to follow up about timing of that, because I think there may be things still developing in terms of our permitting approach regarding that, and so it might make sense to wait longer until we have more information about
our region's
approach.
That would be fine. That would be your judgment, not mine.
Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you. Board members, items of interest, future agenda items, hearing none. Agenda item number 13 is closed session. We do not have items to discuss in closed session. And so, arrangements for next meeting and adjournment is the final agenda item. 9 a.m. Wednesday, April 15th of this year, 9 a.m. Thursday, April 16th of this year at Skyline Boulevard, our home office. And so with that, I adjourn this meeting off the board. Thank you, Chair Hart. You and I should chat at some point in time, maybe
yes.
Maybe next week.
Yes, sounds good. Thank you, everybody.